are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people who make them and do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates or advertisers. Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous, gorgeous planet we call Earth. Thanks for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Those of you joining us for the very first time, a special welcome to you. I'm delighted that you're here, and I hope you make a habit out of it. It's a good habit to get into, and we welcome you aboard. You're in good company. There are people listening from, really, I guess, all over the world. Well, not all over, but pretty much. It's folks are listening in 95 countries, and now you're here, so we're delighted. Well, there was some sad news today. Of course, that's true of just about every day. If you look for it, there's always some sad news. But truly, there's some sad news. For us who are fans of science fiction and who are interested in things out in space, well, it's sad news. Arthur C. Clarke, who I think probably all of you know, Arthur C. Clarke was the author of the book 2001, A Space Odyssey, which, of course, then was turned into a blockbuster movie, passed away at the age of 90 today in Sri Lanka. He was, for the past several decades, has been living in Colombo, Sri Lanka. And in Colombo, Sri Lanka, where he spent a great portion of his life, he left us. And The report, the only thing that they said about his passing was that he had some breathing problems and then passed away. 90 years of age, not only was Arthur C. Clarke a really gifted, noted writer of science fiction, he also was very scientifically oriented. And you know, many of you around the world, you're listening to this broadcast by means of the signal at some points along the way being beamed up to a satellite and back down to your part of the world. Well, those satellites are telecommunications satellites. They are in geosynchronous orbit, and it is thanks to Arthur C. Clarke that those exist. He is the visionary who first envisioned putting satellites in space and using them for telecommunications and putting them in a new type of orbit that had not been imagined before, the geosynchronous orbit. That's true. And those of you who use mobile telephones, and that's just about everybody, try to remember each time you use your mobile telephone, or as they refer to them here in the United States, cell phones, you're using technology that's based on Arthur C. Clarke's vision for the future. He is the father of the telecommunications satellites. He's the first one to dream it up and put it on paper. So a great man, a great visionary, a great futurist, and certainly, no question about it, a great author. Arthur C. Clarke, dead at the age of 90. Tonight, we talk to another author, and his name is John Ventry. We'll be back right after this. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to AlienSeekerNews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artist from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com.
Lost in a daydream, I'm so far away. Wistful and wandering, I drift through the day. A world just for you and me. But I got to make this dream come true. Make a wish and say a prayer. I close my eyes at night and see you there. Wish that I could share my life with you.
You know, there's never been a better time for you to start your own broadcast. I know there are a lot of paranormal investigators. I know there are a lot of people who are paranormal experiencers who want to have their own broadcast. Well, now you can, right here at Steel Eye Media Network. It is within your grasp. You can do it, and we're waiting to hear from you. Give us a call today at 1-800-318-1008. My guest this evening is John Ventry. John is a pretty remarkable individual. He is the director of security, or security director for two states, for a very, very large corporation. He also is the state director for MUFON for Pennsylvania and West Virginia. He is therefore involved in UFO investigations, but as his bio says, he has always been quite interested in science fiction, and he shared with me some of the science fiction plots he's got rolling around in his head. I'll tell you, this guy, all he needs is a movie producer just to hang out with him, and there would be a string of blockbuster movies. He's got a book out called 12/21/2012, A Prophecy. John Ventry, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thanks, Kevin. I appreciate it.
John, you know, in reading the bio that's on your website, I discovered that you're kind of a brainy guy. You maintained a 3.8 grade point average, which is, you know, perfect is 4 point, and 3.8 is pretty phenomenal. A lot of people do it, but the vast majority of us do not. And you've got a very high position, very responsible position with your company and with MUFON. How does somebody like that, kind of brainy sort of a guy, I mean, I would expect when I see that, I would almost expect you to be kind of a computer geek or something, you know, but how does a guy go from being that to having all these science fiction plots just kind of boiling and rolling around in his head?
Well, you know, I've always been a big sci-fi fan. In the growing up, watching, you know, 1950s movies, I used to get this famous Monsters of Filmland magazine, and I couldn't wait to read it, Fate magazine. And I've just always loved the paranormal, sci-fi, and it's really the ideas, you know, a new idea, something creative. And, you know, I'll watch movies, and I'll sit there and say, well, they should have said this, they could have done that. And I'm almost critiquing movies as I watch them. And my whole family says I should have got into the movie business. I actually used to make movies as a teenager. We'd make werewolf movies and vampire movies. And, you know, they kid me that you could have been the next Spielberg, but you actually have to work for a living and, you know, and pay the bills first. So I'm hoping that, you know, now in my over 50 years that maybe I can get into, you know, making a movie, because I have so many ideas.
Well, tell us a little bit about this this book, and I'll back up from time to time into your experiences with MUFON as, you know, as questions occur during our conversation. But the book that you've written has to do with something everyone that listens to the, almost everybody that listens to this show is interested in 2012, and I know that because of the questions that callers ask when they call into the show and talk with guests. It always comes up, 2012, what do you think about this, what do you think about that? So why 2012? What's the deal here?
Well, I had all these ideas on, you know, writing a science fiction book, and the Mayan calendar ends on December 21st, 2012, and their calendar is the most accurate calendar that's ever been developed. And this was from a, you know, group of people that were Stone Age and all of a sudden made that leap. And, you know, next thing they're building expansion bridges and they got, you know, they're making calendars and astronomy, et cetera. So I wanted to use that date and, you know, and then form my story around that date. It doesn't really have to do with the Mayan calendar, but it has to do with predictions and, you know, Edgar Cayce, Gene Dixon, a little bit of Nostradamus, although he didn't say much about 2012, and then form the story around that.
Your view of what's coming, I guess, is inexorably woven into the plot of this book. Or it may be not your view, but your speculations about what's coming. And let's back up a little bit and let me ask you, have you given some thought to what you think might be coming in 2012?
Well, you know, it's funny. In 2012, our solar system is in the exact center of the Milky Way galaxy. Now, I don't know how the Mayans would know that, you know, 1,500 years ago. But that's interesting that we're going to be in the exact center of the Milky Way galaxy. And there's a lot of predictions. And a lot of them around 2012 is that there's going to be some sort of disaster. You know, and the Mayans kind of showed that there'd be a flood. There's predictions by Gene Dixon that there's going to be some sort of catastrophe. She had a vision of being in Washington, D.C., and it was a barren wasteland. And so I've made my storyline around a small asteroid that's going to hit on that day. And what's interesting is, and I got the idea from this asteroid that's out there, Apophis. I don't know if you've talked about that or anybody knows about that. A-P-O-P-H-I-S. It's going to pass by in about 3 weeks on April 13th. And it passes by every 7 years. And it passes by on April 13th every 7 years, and it gets closer and closer. It's a half mile wide, and it's big enough to take out a city. It's not a planet killer. And when it passes by, I think it's in 2026, it's actually going to be lower, closer to the Earth than the satellites. Satellites are at 26,000 feet. It's going to pass by at 21,000 feet. So that's where I got the idea.
Well, you mean miles?
Oh, miles, yeah, right. Miles.
Yeah, because 26,000 feet is not all that high.
Yeah, that's about half the height of a plane.
Yeah
no, miles, yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's interesting. It's going to pass by lower than our communication satellites. And then reading Gene Dixon's predictions that something's going to happen. You know, I got the idea from there to put the storyline around this asteroid called Apophis. And you should see it in the news in a couple of weeks. They should be talking about it around early April.
Now, so these are not necessarily your predictions or your views of what's coming, but you took the views and predictions of some other noted psychics and visionaries and so forth and used that for your storyline.
Yeah, and what I did also is, what I tried to do is describe the world in 2012. So I did make a lot of predictions on what's going to change. And, you know, it is a science fiction story, so I actually have President Bush still in office in 2012. Now, some people said that's a horror story, not a science fiction story, but I'm a Republican. And, I still have him in office. But I was thinking about when FDR served four terms. You know, I have him in office due to terrorism, really, so he stays in office. And I make a lot of predictions about things that'll change. And it's funny, I was just reading, glancing through the book, and I wrote this book really in 96, and I put in there that in 2008, the housing market collapses and the stock market collapses due to terrorism. And you kind of see that happening now, although it's not due to terrorism.
Yeah, it's due to a whole lot of stupidism.
Right.
Yeah. How is it that you have President Bush still in office? How did you achieve that?
Well, I had the idea of FDR staying in office for four terms during World War II because it was a time of crisis. So in the storyline, we suspend the 22nd Amendment. And it's funny, I have in the book, too, that Hillary and Obama are running. But when we suspend the 22nd Amendment that allows Bush to stay in office, Bill Clinton is then allowed to run as Hillary's vice president because we suspended the 22nd Amendment. So it's just an idea I had. The book is really filled with a lot of just unique ideas, and the people that have read it and gave me feedback, there's so much in there about politics and leading up to this whole science fiction ending, where the book is really about where did we come from. You know, was it evolution, was it creation, or was there alien intervention in it? And, you know, the cover of the book shows a flooded version of the United States because water levels rise 40 feet. And the Great Lakes are actually one lake, and it's a flooded version. But it has nothing to do with global warming. It has to do with this event that happens in the storyline.
All right. Now, when we talk about plots like this, I mean, something comes to mind immediately. And that is a movie called The Day After Tomorrow.
Yeah.
The Day After Tomorrow, when it first came out, there was a huge outcry around the world that it was alarmist and that people were just going to be terrified and go nuts. And, you know, and then a couple of scientists spoke up and said, well, you know what? The science in there is pretty good. All of that is plausible. The only thing that we disagree with is the timeline. They have it happening in a matter of a few days, and we think if something like that were to happen, it would happen over a long period of time. Do you have any of those types of disasters taking place in your book?
Yeah, actually, I do. And I actually explain how this whole global warming thing works, that when the what happens is actually when the ice melts and cold water goes into the Atlantic, the salt level drops to the bottom, and it slows the Gulf Stream down. And that's how you get these ice ages that happen. And the funny thing is that every 500 years or so, we have a mini ice age. It's happened a number of times. So a lot of the global warming people who say that it's from carbon dioxide, I don't agree with that. I think that's bad science. And this has happened in the 1800s, actually from a period of 1300 to 1850. It was very cold, and we're just going back into that cycle again, and it's really from sunspots. It's really not, I don't believe it's from the carbon dioxide. I think that's like a Y2K panic thing that we got going right now.
Well, you know, that's something that I've said on this show, and there are people who strongly disagree with that view.
I know.
and that's fine. One thing that people have learned who listen to this show is that I mean it when I say I believe in freedom of speech and freedom of thought. And people don't have to agree with me to call in and talk.
Yeah.
You know, one of the big questions I've got, John, about the carbon dioxide and global warming is that scientists tell us that the vast majority of the Martian atmosphere is carbon dioxide.
Yeah.
Why is it so cold? If carbon dioxide is supposed to cause global warming, why isn't it an oven?
Correct, yeah. I mean, it's the sunspots. When the sun goes through these phases and they have solar flares, that heats up the planet. And it's a slow, long period, and we're going into that. And actually, in my book, I explain the different periods through history where this happened. It happened 6,000 years ago, and I tell you how temperatures either dropped 6-7 degrees or rise 6-7 degrees. And that's a scientific fact. This happens every 400-500 years.
Are we due for another ice age?
Well, absolutely. As a matter of fact, what's predicted is another ice age starting around 2100. And, you know, in my storyline, I advance that where it starts more in this 2012, but it's because of a natural disaster that takes place.
Are you familiar with a book called Not by Fire, but by Ice, written by Robert Felix?
No, I'm not.
You ought to get your hands on that. Robert Felix, and the reason I say that is I think because of what you're saying, you would really appreciate what he's written. Robert Felix has been on the show, and he uses meteorological and climatological data to show that the so-called global warming isn't happening Not in the, certainly not in the way that it has been described by the, you know, pop science. What he says is that what they are interpreting as global warming is ocean warming, and that this is happening as a result of volcanic activity in the oceans, and that it's a cycle, and we go through it every so many hundred years, and so many thousand. He names several cycles that we go through. Some of them are every few hundred years, some are every few thousand, some are every, you know, like 600,000, 700,000 years, something like that. Okay, and then he says, the thing about it is that you have to realize that global warming is what happens on each side of an ice age.
Okay.
And, you know, you have global warming. And if you start with an ice age, you have an ice age, and the way you come out of the ice age is global warming. Hmm. It's ocean warming.
Yeah.
And the trend continues until it finally reaches a point that it creates an overabundance of precipitation, which drops the temperatures and starts an ice age.
You know, one of the interesting things, too, that they don't tell you, and I saw this on a show and I read it also, that although in the Arctic Circle up north, the ice sheets are melting in Greenland, et cetera, but they're increasing in the Antarctic in the south. The ice sheets are getting thicker, the glaciers down there, because you have to wonder, why aren't sea levels rising? And the other thing that's happening, which I was disappointed to hear, is as that melts in the north, the continental shelf is lifting. And I saw something that said that the Niagara Falls will no longer flow in about 40 years from now. It'll be like a stream because the continental shelf is lifting, and Niagara Falls will just won't have the flow. It'll actually be rising. And that's why water levels are not rising along the East Coast. Because you'd have to wonder, if we have all this global warming, where are the floods? You know, why isn't the water level rising? It's not. But, you know, that's a smaller part of my storyline. One of the things I put in the storyline, though, is as this ice melts in Greenland, they find a time capsule. And in the time capsule, there are aliens. So they've always been here, and they've been here 50,000 years. And that's a theme that you see a lot.
And have you seen the... you can find it on YouTube, the video from someone did a video from using Google Earth.
Okay.
Took a look at Greenland and showed that there is this huge anomaly. It's about 50 miles long and about 12 miles wide.
You know, I heard about that, but I didn't see it on Google. But you're saying it could be some sort of a craft or something?
Oh, I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
I really have no idea what it is. We've done some shows on that. I've had a remote viewer take a look at that, he and his team, and he told us some rather interesting things about it that kind of go along with what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But it interests me that you put this in Greenland, and then here's this thing in Greenland, whatever it is.
Yeah, and I wrote this story in 96, and I just finished it up about 2 years ago. I let it sit for about 10 years. But in the storyline, we revive them, actually revive one of the two that are still alive, and he tells us the history of our planet. And I took a lot of information that I have read, just, you know, out-of-place objects in archaeology and things that don't add up in our evolution, et cetera. And it really makes for a good storyline as to what this guy says to us. And then there's a good twist to the end, and I'm not going to tell you, obviously, what happens, but it's a good X-Files-type end in the last chapter of the book as to whether that information gets out to everyone or not.
Folks, I have to tell you that privately, John did tell me what that twist is. And it's really, really rather amazing. John, we have to take a break.
Okay.
And it's coming up here in about 20 seconds or so. I can't tell you, folks, what the twist is, but it does leave it open for the next book and the next movie. I tell you, it's a good lead in to the next one. And certainly is X-File-ish. We'll be back right after this break. Don't go away. Welcome back. We're talking with John Ventry. And John is security director for a very large corporation. His area covers two states. He is also a state director, but has two states for MUFON. And he is the author of 12-21-2001. I'm sorry, 2012. I'm almost mixing you up there with Arthur C. Clarke's Space Odyssey. It's 12-21-2012, A Prophecy. John, let's talk just a little bit. Let's move from the book just a little bit into your work with MUFON.
Okay.
And we'll come back to the book, because I think they're related. They have
Absolutely.
To be.
Mm-hmm.
I know because of the position you have and because of the company you're with that you have to be a very grounded, feet on the ground, level-headed sort of person. I have held a similar position, and I know that you have to be that way. So is that an accurate description?
Yeah, absolutely. I was a little bit skeptical. I've been a MUFON member for 10 years, but I've never seen a UFO. And, I'd read what's out there. And then last year they asked me to be the state director for two states. So I said, let me look, dig into this now. If I'm going to represent them, I need to know the facts. And if I could just take a second, I want to just tell you about some of the things that I found, which are government documents that really support the fact that there's no doubt that there are UFOs out there.
All right.
And if I could just run through that quickly.
Sure.
In 1960, the Brookings Institute did a report on the implications of space travel and contact with UFOs and aliens. I have the report right here in front of me. It was done in 1960, and their conclusion is that society would disintegrate if we were to find out. We would be devastated with the knowledge that there are superior creatures out there to us. So we have this, but basically the people can't handle the truth. And that's a 1960 Brookings Institute report. The RAND Corporation 68 came to the same conclusion: you have to deny and ridicule the UFO phenomenon. In 1967, 115 countries signed the Outer Space Treaty, which basically says you can't put nuclear weapons in space, but all information has to be shared. Well, we're the only one with a back-engineered UFO from Roswell, and we're not looking to share. And I'm very pro-United States, and I don't think we should share that technology. So, and then in 1968 to 70, this is interesting, at the Air Force Academy, the cadet training manual, this was taught 3 years in Colorado Springs at the Air Force Academy. They had a chapter, Physics 370. They have a chapter on UFOs. And this is being taught at the Air Force Academy. It was authored by Colonel Wendell Stevens, and it's called Unidentified Flying Objects. And that was taken out of the Air Force Academy after Project Blue Book concluded that UFOs are no threat. The government never said that there's not UFOs, only that they're not a threat. Then in 1969, there's an extraterrestrial exposure law that says that if you come in contact with a UFO, that you could face 1 year in prison and a $5,000 fine and be quarantined without a hearing. Now, this is all about something that supposedly doesn't exist, but you have all of these government documents that say that it does exist. If you go to the fire department in any city, any town in the United States, there's a fire officer's guide to disaster control. It was written in 1992. It was copywritten by the Fire Engineering Books and Videos, and it talks about, there's a section on UFOs. I mean, they're not talking about meteors. They're talking about UFOs, and it goes into the history of UFOs, and that's in every fire department in the country.
Yeah, and you know, by the way, it tells them what they should expect.
Yep.
Things like as you approach the crash site, you may expect that the engine of your vehicle, your fire truck, may stop functioning, your communications may go down, and so forth. That would tend to make you understand that whoever wrote this, understands that there is electromagnetic interference that comes from these UFOs.
Right, and this is approved by FEMA. So you've got all of this evidence. This is what convinced me 100% that UFOs are real. Then in 1999, France came out with their report. Their version of NASA is called COMETA, and they came out with a report on UFOs and defense, and they go again into the history of UFOs. This is a French military report, and their conclusion at the end is that the United States has back-engineered a UFO from Roswell and that they're not sharing, which violates those laws that I just went over. And I think that's the whole gist of this UFO thing, is that we've back-engineered one. These other countries want us to share the technology, and we're not willing to do that, and I don't think that we should share the technology. And this is some of the information that I've come up with that, to me, I think it's 100% that there is a UFO phenomenon.
Well, now, I fully understand, and I agree and have so stated on this show, that that type of technology needs to be kept under wraps. Just last night, I asked the guest this question. Can you imagine what would happen if that kind of technology fell into the hands of a maniac who's bent on the destruction of other nations? And there are actually, I don't remember the exact words I used last night, but I asked that question. And then there actually are other nations that are run by raving maniacs.
Right, we can't share this technology with China, Iran, North Korea, even though it violates that, you know, outer space treaty. You know, we have to be the ones that really keep the world free.
Well, I would hope that we're not the only people interested in keeping the world free.
Right.
And I know what you mean, but at the same time, there are nations that are as committed to freedom as are we. They stand with us and alongside us and bleed with us in a lot of places around the world. Nevertheless, this technology is so advanced that if we have it, and I put a big capital I on if we have it, because I haven't seen it. I've heard rumors.
Right.
But if we have it, it is so awesome that it really has to be kept under wraps, because it could destroy everything that we know of as civilization on this planet, if we have it.
Right. Now, the only negative part of this, and a lot of what I read, is that a lot of people are saying that this could take us off of oil dependency. It would be a free-burning type technology. But you don't know if that technology can be used, you know, by a terrorist for a car bomb. You don't know how potent it is, even though it could be something to replace our internal combustion engines.
Well, yeah, and there are a lot of things that can be used to take us off of dependence on petroleum. Lots of things. We've talked about on this show biodiesel that's being produced. It's not something that's predicted for the future. It's now being produced and refined, and it's being produced from algae. And so, you know, there are a lot of things that can move us away from dependence on petroleum. Nuclear power plants can do that, but we don't proliferate that technology either. Other countries have it, but, you know, we're not in the business of spreading that technology around the earth either.
Right.
And for the reasons that you mentioned. And, you know, it's a great way to produce electricity. On the other hand, it is also very, very, very dangerous. And the kind of technology that we're talking about here with a back-engineered UFO, if that has happened, you're talking about a technology that's way beyond nuclear power plants.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, in your work as the director of MUFON, I suppose that you are involved in the investigation of UFO reports.
Yes. Now, let me just tell you a little bit about MUFON. And it's funny, when Project Blue Book ended in 1969 and they concluded that 93% of the UFO sightings are explainable and the other 7% are not a threat, well, the government stopped investigating UFOs. And that's when MUFON started in 1969. So we've taken over from the government for the investigations, and that's what we do. We have 2,500 members, about a third of them, 800 are investigators, and you have to take a test and pass an exam, and then you become a certified investigator. So about one out of every three members is an investigator. And we get about 1,500 reports a year. Here in Pennsylvania, I get about one a week, about 50 a year.
What about West Virginia?
Well, West Virginia gets, they get about 20. They get about half of what I get in Pennsylvania. They'll get about 20 to 25 a year.
Now, would you say that when MUFON investigates these reports, that your statistics follow pretty much, do they pretty much track the Blue Book statistics? In other words, about 93% are explained.
Yeah. Yes, about 90. We come up with about 90% of them are explainable. You know, and sometimes it's a little hard to get help from the FAA as to whether there was a radar sighting, et cetera. But it's pretty much accepted that 9 out of 10 sightings that are reported can be explained. But it's that 10%, 7% that's left that are the interesting ones. And, you know, when you went through my background, that's not unusual for the people involved in MUFON.
Hate to do it, we have to take a break. We'll continue with that line of thought as soon as we get back from this break. My guest, John Ventry, and the book, 1221-2012, A Prophecy. We'll be back right after this.
This foolish fight.
Did you know the Kevin Smith Show selects one of its very best shows each week and turns it into a free podcast? Well, it's true. You can download free Kevin Smith Show podcasts right now and get a free fresh podcast each week. Do you want to start building your own library of Kevin Smith Shows? All you have to do is visit our website at kevinsmithshow.com and click the free podcast link. They're yours for the download. We're talking with John Ventry, and just before we get back to John, let me remind you, if you have not done so, be sure you go over to kevinsmithshow.com and subscribe to our free weekly newsletter. There's no reason not to be getting that newsletter, and as some of you members have discovered who are not subscribed to the newsletter, important announcements always go to that newsletter. All right, so like if the members area has problems and we're working on it, that announcement is in the newsletter. And so you need that. We have updates in there each week, all right, along with some articles and links to interesting things. We got some interesting links, very interesting links coming up in this week's edition. So be sure you subscribe. It's free. No reason not to do it. Now, John, you were talking about your work with MUFON, and I had to cut you off. So if you want to pick up there and run with it, go ahead.
Yeah, I was saying, you know, it's not unusual that the people that are involved with MUFON have a real good background. And, you know, you've got Dr. Stephen Greer, you've got Dr. Lynn Katai out in Phoenix with the Phoenix Lights. You know, I've got a very good background. The person, Jim Carrion, in charge of MUFON was in the military intelligence. Most of the members are either police, military, or pilots. They all have good backgrounds. And what I find with the group is that, you know, we're talking, you know, very intelligently. There aren't nuts in MUFON. You know, we believe that you know, this UFO phenomenon is real, and really what we talk about is, you know, what's the next step? Disclosure. Stephen Bassett ran for a Senate seat, and, you know, he talks a lot about how do we handle disclosure after 60 years, and, you know, what are the implications in society if you tell them that there is a superior race out there. And the MUFON group is very educated, very well-versed.
Well, I guess, you know, sort of picked up on a couple of times you mentioned the superior race. I'm not so sure they are, actually, after looking at this thing for a number of years. Now, I certainly have not been doing what I do for 50 years, like some investigators have been investigating for 40 or 50 years, and my hat is off to them. But you know, I've been doing this show now, let's see, in 2 months it'll be 8 years. And so in that period of time, I have come to think that based on information that we've gotten from people who say they have had, you know, they've been abducted, they've had personal contact, and then based on looking at patterns in the way that these things happen, I'm not so sure they're really superior. I think they might have superior technology.
Yeah,
I don't think there's any. I don't think there's any question about that. They have some superior technology.
Yeah, but I agree. I don't know that their moral code is superior if they're abducting and experimenting on people. But obviously, if they have craft that can fly around the way they do, that they do have superior technology.
They do. And, you know, one of the things that we hear a lot about is that they're doing these, they abduct people and they're doing these sort of genetic things. Okay, and one of the stories that we hear over and over and over again is that somehow there's something in our genetics they need. Well, that makes us superior.
Right.
And if we have something they need, then at that point, whatever that is,
we are superior. And there may be other points at which we are. Have you come to any sort of conclusion yourself as to whether extraterrestrials actually exist? And then secondly, if they do, have you come to any conclusion as to whether their agenda is beneficial or non-beneficial to humans?
Yeah, actually, I was asked that recently. I gave a lecture at a college last month, and I do believe that they exist. And I don't believe that their agenda is to harm us, because they could have wiped us out years ago. They could have sterilized us, and in one generation we would be gone. And I don't know of really UFO attacks on us that, take place. Personally, I think that they're an older race and that they're nonviolent. And they're here either to observe us, and they could even be us coming back from the future, or they could be, you know, in the ocean. And I don't think that they have an agenda to harm us. I really don't. I know some people would do aggressive hypnosis, say there's a hybrid program and they're here to take over, et cetera. Well, they would have done that all already by now. I think they're more observing us as scientists and maybe guiding us or hoping to stop us if, you know, from a nuclear war or something that could destroy this planet, because I think this planet is has to be one of the most diverse out there, you know, in the galaxy.
Have you seen the original movie of War of the Worlds?
Yes. Yeah.
I watched that again today. It was on television here, and at the end of it, something caught my attention that never had before. At the end of it, the only thing that saved humankind is germs.
Right.
The extraterrestrials, the Martians in the case of that movie, the Martians were susceptible to our germs, things that we were completely immune to, and it wiped them out. And that's the only thing that saved us was the little germs.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that hit my mind immediately, because last night we had been talking, I talked with Daryl Sims last night, and we had been talking about the possibility of a hybridization program taking place. And when I saw that movie and saw the end of it, I said, you know, because I asked the question, why would they want to hybridize? And there was the answer. The answer being to come up with a version of them that is not susceptible to those germs, so that they could either live on this planet or successfully invade this planet, whatever their plans are. But why would they want to hybridize? Germs.
Right, in order to exist here. And it's funny, there's a lot of people who say in 2012 something like that is going to happen. Either our consciousness gets raised to a different level, a different plane, or there's going to be disclosure, contact. Something is going to happen that's going to change us to the next step in evolution.
Oh, so it could be all of those.
It could be all of them, yeah.
And it could be all of those and an impending impact, as in your book.
Yeah.
Now, in your book, does the asteroid actually impact the Earth?
Well, here's the deal. In the storyline, they pick up this small asteroid, and it's actually the impact place is the Vatican. So it makes for good dialogue as to why the Vatican and the Pope gets together with his cardinals to discuss, is this a punishment? Will it actually happen? But there's a larger asteroid behind it that the government knows about, and they don't tell the people. And I'm not going to tell you any more about what happens with that, but that's in the storyline. But with this whole evolution thing, to take a step back, one of our genes, and it's in the book, I think it was APSM, one of our genes 6,000 years ago mutated, and we became a more intelligent species. And another thing I put in the book that I read is that the human race has the most genetic defects and diseases, more than any other species that's out there. And people say that might be because alien DNA has already been blended with ours at some time in the past, either that missing link that people talk about, and we have a version of their diseases and genetic abnormalities and our own, because we absolutely have the most diseases and abnormalities of any species.
Yeah, I read somewhere, and I certainly cannot verify this, I can't even remember where I read it, that we have something like 4,000 genetic defects, genetic problems that should not be there. And that's a lot. I mean, even if it was 400, that would be a lot. We have to take a break. When we come back from this break, we'll continue talking with John Ventry. And we'll continue talking about his book and how it relates to his work as the state director for two states, for MUFON. How much reality made it into the fiction? And that's something I'm particularly interested in, John, when we come back, because, you know, there's that rumor out there that disclosure is happening through sci-fi. We'll be back.
Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
We're back, and let me welcome all of you who are joining us just now in this second hour. We're talking with John Ventry,
John is the security director for two states for a very large corporation. I happen to know which one, but I won't say. If he doesn't say, then I won't say. But it is, it's one you know about. It's a big one. And he is also the director, state director, for Pennsylvania and for West Virginia, for MUFON. He is, in addition to that, a science fiction writer, got a new book out called 12/21/2012, A Prophecy. And we're talking with him about that and how real life gets woven into the science fiction. That's what we're about to move into. Now, our telephone number, toll-free throughout North America, is, as always, 1-800-289-1092. 1-800-289-1092. If you have a question or a comment for John, that's the number to call. I pay for the call. It's toll-free, all right? For those of you who live outside of North America, it's just as easy for you to participate because all you have to do is send me an email. Send it to flash@kevinsmithshow.com. Let me give that to you again. Flash, that's F-L-A-S-H, flash@kevinsmithshow.com. If you're outside of North America.
John, we have the telephone lines are already lighting up. We'll get back to what I wanted to ask you about here in just a moment. But let's just go to the phone line. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, hello. This is Kevin from Iroquois Falls, Ontario.
Hello, Kevin. I'm glad to hear you pronounce your name correctly.
And how are you doing, John?
Very good. Thank you.
Yes. I heard you talking about UFOs, ETs and the governments and that, talking with ETs and that, and I wanted to know if you remember from back in 1989 when there was a supposed interview with an ET, and that, remember there was a video that surfaced about it?
Are you talking about the video where the ET is in medical distress as they're in an interview room, and then it appears that he passes out?
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. What I want to ask about it is, what do you think about the fact that that we made a deal with them, that we are allowing them to abduct people in exchange for some of their technology? What is your thought on that?
Well, you know, if we're doing that, then we're suppressing the technology because I haven't seen a whole lot of it outside of the computer side of, you know, miniaturization of chips and fiber optics. But I really think that the whole story behind the ET side is that we back-engineered that Roswell ship. We have it. We're not going to share the technology because of the way some of these other countries behave, and that we're pretty much the global cop that is going to make, you know, keep the world safe. And,
I think
that's what it's about.
And I got another question about that, too. Do you think that if that's the case, that we've actually been exchanging technology with them in exchange for some of our own, you know, genetic material, do you think that a lot of the disc-shaped UFOs that we've been seeing over the past few years are actually humans flying those extraterrestrial vessels?
Well, a lot of the sightings that we get are definitely our military. And, you know, we find that, you know, like I said, 90% of them, 93% are misidentified, or, you know, there were planes at the distance, there's something else, and a lot of them are our military craft. I think we have a whole next generation of military craft way beyond the stealth fighter, and I think a lot of people see that. But I'm not in agreement that we're exchanging anything with the UFOs. Our policy since the 1940s, right after Roswell, has been to shoot them down. So I don't think there's an exchange of culture here or any information. I think I know our policy is to shoot them down. We want their ships. We want to continue to back engineer them, and we're keeping it to ourselves, which we should do.
Well, do you think that maybe we have copied their technology? Maybe we made discs of our own, and or they made discs of their own, and they're flying them around and.
You know, that's possible. I mean, we could be at that stage where we have a small fleet of UFOs that if there is ever a grave situation with China or the Soviet Union, that's our next version of the military that can stop any sort of missile attack.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call.
Let me ask you if you've ever, in taking reports from MUFON, have you run into people who say, well, the thing we saw had flight characteristics that no airplane that we know of could do it? Have you run into that?
Absolutely. That comes up a lot where, you know, the change of direction or the speed at which it takes off is beyond anything that we have right now. That, you know, that probably comes up in probably 60-70% of the reports, and that's what catches people's attention, either the speed or the change of direction.
All right. Have you seen the video on YouTube or Google of the new Russian MiG-35?
No, I haven't seen that.
All right, I'll tell you what you do. You go to YouTube and Google. Go to YouTube and search for MiG-35.
Okay.
And when you see that, it looks like an airplane. I mean, if you see it, you would say, just from looking at it, that's an airplane. When you watch that video, you will swear no plane can do what you just saw.
Okay.
That plane stops in the air, flips over in the space of its own length, and heads another direction.
You see, Stanton Friedman says that there's been other crashes and that the Russians have probably back-engineered a UFO. We have. I only know about the Roswell one and the one up in Shag Harbor, but that one got away. And, you know, it's very possible that there's been a crash and a back engineering in another country. I just hope it's not a hostile country.
Well, I don't know if the MiG-35 is back engineered, but that is one fabulous show when you watch that thing perform. It's just awesome. So take a look at that. And, you know, I can envision that plane causing a lot of UFO reports in Russia.
I could
envision that, because it does things no plane that we know of could do. I bet our military has some, but we haven't seen them yet.
Right.
But that is one amazing air show. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Bob from California.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, I had a kind of interesting aspect that I had some questions on. This goes more into the galactic psychology of everything, really. I was watching a program that had to deal with feral children. I don't know if you've heard of what that is. It's basically children that have been raised by dogs.
Right.
And then by studying them, it seemed like after like age five, they really couldn't really learn any kind of a language at all, almost. And the way that the brain developed, they actually thought they were like dogs and really had a lot of the personality. And it seemed as if it brought up a nature-nurture debate, which means, you know, are you going to become what's fed to you? And my whole thing was to bring it and loop it back around to the Star Trek thing. It's actually very interesting because it goes way ahead of our time with possibilities. It's not just nerd stuff. I wanted to see what you thought that if we were to evolve and get past all the atomic bombs and everything, do you think that humans are actually capable of having a kind of system where it's not about money and greed, but it's actually for bettering society? And do you think that a nature, like nurturing that way and being raised in that environment, if that's strong enough for a human race to actually take hold and really go along with that? Or do you think that we're just kind of destined to always be kind of apish? And you have a lot of Star Trek experience and stuff, so I'd like to hear it from that perspective, and I thank you.
Yeah, I don't know that we're going to get beyond being animals, you know, in our behavior. Now, this alien technology, their race is obviously different than ours. It may be for the entire good of their society, you know, almost like a hive-type mentality. You know, for us to get past this, it's probably hundreds of years out where we work for the benefit of humanity. Now, if you remember, Ronald Reagan gave some speeches to the UN talking about how we would behave that way if we were faced with a threat from outside of this world, from an alien race. We would act in the benefit of all humans. But when you talk about this feral child, what came to mind with me was people who say that they've been abducted or that, you know, they've had their fetuses taken, and how we have to, how the aliens are unable to show those emotions, and that the women, the humans, are needed to nurture those children. And similar to what you were saying, with as a feral child.
Now, you know, he brings up a good point. I saw that documentary that he's referring to, and saw it some time ago. It brings up, as he said, the whole debate or question about nature or nurture. And I don't think it's one or the other. But I do think that when you look at what happens to those children that are brought up by dogs, or in some cases there are reports in other parts of the world of them having been brought up by apes. And they lived in the jungle. And, of course, the whole story of Tarzan is based on that.
Correct.
But there are some real stories, not just the fiction. There are some real stories. And it does change what that child seems to be capable of becoming. I think it proves that when we talk about being humans, I think it proves that we are more than our DNA. That's important. But not everything gets hardwired into the DNA.
I agree with you.
Let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Debbie from Columbus.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi. Interesting show tonight. I wanted to ask a question. Basically, I'm going to approach this from what I call the esoteric point of view. As Kevin, you know, that is what I work in.
Yeah, you're kind of an out there esoteric mind, aren't you?
Exactly.
Yeah.
2012 has been taught by many folks in the field that I work in as the Earth changes, basically, the polar shifts and everything like that going on. And I just wanted to know what your guest's view is on that.
Well, let's ask him. What's your view on that polar shift?
Well, I read the book by Noonan about pole shifts, and we know that the at times that we've actually the electromagnetic has gone in a different direction. And the interesting thing that I put in my story, and I mentioned how the Antarctic and the South Pole is growing. In my storyline, it starts to the Earth almost starts to wobble differently because all the ice now is at the bottom, because the north has melted, and the weight of all the ice, which is probably about 80% of it, is in the bottom, and that could cause a pole shift.
Interesting thought. Very interesting thought.
Thank you for the call, Debbie.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. It actually, I'm not sure of the physics of this, but it actually, if that were to happen, as it does in your book, it is possible that the northern regions of the planet might actually try to spin a little faster than the South Pole, which could set up some tremendous earthquakes.
Right, and even a small change, I mean, it could put the United States either at the equator, or depending on how it shifts, it could put us, where the North Pole is right now, if the surface of the Earth just moves, a couple hundred miles, a week or a month.
Now, this whole thing about pole shift is really intriguing, because some people talk about the Earth itself flipping over physically. Others talk about the crust slipping around the core of the Earth, and so that it just shifts, slips around the core, and everything winds up in a different place. And others talk about it just being a change in the magnetic pole, so that what is the North Pole becomes your compass, instead of pointing the direction it points now, will be pulled in the other direction. What do you think it is? Which one of those do you think is the most likely to happen?
I can see where this global warming, if you know, for whatever reason it's happening, you know, like I had said, where the north is going to melt and the south is getting larger, and I can see where the crust will move because of the weight in the south, and I don't think we're going to actually reverse, like in the one book I read, you know, because that would cause tidal waves to wash over the whole planet and everything would be destroyed, and this supposedly has happened before. But I could see us where the United States is no longer where we are, you know, longitudinal, latitudinal, where we could end up at the equator with a small type of a movement, you know, with the crust.
There are scientists that say that Antarctica used to be approximately where Australia is today.
Yeah, and that's what I think. I think that that's possible.
Well, that would mean if everything moves that direction, that means Australia would wind up where Antarctica is today, and Antarctica would wind up basically where South America is.
And that would put us at the North Pole. And no more United States, which is not a good thing. I was hoping we'd kind of move the other way.
I don't know. I like cold weather myself.
Yeah, well, I got a couple of snowmobiles.
I've lived for a number of years in the area of the Earth that we call the Balkans. And wintertime is actually winter in the Balkans.
Yeah.
And there's nothing quite like a Balkan blizzard. And I've also lived on a tropical island that is virtually on the equator, and lived there for a couple of years. Between the two, the island was much more beautiful because it was like paradise, but the weather was much easier to take for me in those cold winters. I there's something about that. You know, you can put on enough clothes to get warm, but you can't get naked enough to get cool.
Yeah, I prefer the mountains and the snow. I'm not a beach type person. I prefer my snowmobiles.
Yeah. However, the food supply would probably be much more plentiful in the tropical regions.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. All right, now, I want to get back to this question that I posed just before that last break. And I want to get into this before we get to the next break. There is sort of a persistent thinking, a persistent theory, a persistent rumor that seems to float around the world of ufology that disclosure is actually taking place, and it's happening through movies and science fiction books, novels. What do you think about that? I mean, you're a sci-fi writer, so what do you think about that?
Well, I think if you look at the history of this, you know, with H.G. Wells' his panic broadcast on War of the Worlds that happened, 70 years ago, and then you get this Brookings Institute report that says we can't handle the truth, that society would break down, that may be one of the reasons why we have so many of these sci-fi type movies and shows like The X-Files, you know, sci-fi movies to break us into the thought. I think people nowadays, at least Americans, because we're, you know, a little more educated and exposed to everything in an open society, I think we can handle the fact that there's another race out there, because of the way we live and what we're exposed to. I don't think it's a problem. I think if the Brookings Institute did another study right now, I think they would find out that we can handle the truth. And it's part of us, the way of breaking us in to accept this, that there's going to be disclosure soon. You may have seen recently there was something out that Congress met a few select people last month in February, I think it was right around Valentine's Day, to discuss reopening Project Blue Book, a similar type project because of all the UFO sightings, and to get back into, you know, what do we tell the people and can they handle it? And supposedly that meeting just took place last month.
I did not hear about that, but what I did hear about was alleged meeting at the UN of that nature, and that there were allegedly three U.S. senators present.
That's it. That's what I was referring to.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, the source for the world, the source of that information, how it got out and how it got to us was that it was reported by Dr. Michael Sala on his Exopolitics website. And then there's been a great deal of controversy about whether that meeting actually did take place, and here's one reason why we should believe it did, here's another reason why we should believe it did not, and so forth. That's been kind of raging. And I finally got in touch with Dr. Sala. He is going to be here on Friday night, and we're going to get it straight from him. What's the scoop? But that's a big story out there. And allegedly, the information is that they think there's going to be an unambiguous presence of extraterrestrials sometime by about 2009, 2010. So, I mean, you know, that went across the world like wildfire when it came out. And I want to find out more about how solid is this information. So he's going to be with us. What about you? As you wrote the book, did you weave into that book any real situations that you have learned about as a MUFON investigator?
Well, none of the cases that I actually investigated, but when I put this together, really the second half of the book, the end of the book, I took all of this information on UFOs. So if somebody wasn't really a sci-fi or a UFO fan, and if they started to read this, it would pique their interest, and I managed to work it all into the storyline, the different things I mentioned about some of those laws, the Brookings Institute, what France says, and, you know, back engineering of Roswell, et cetera, and I've worked all that into the story. I didn't use any of the cases that I've investigated and try to build a story around that. It's really a story that goes from predictions about 2012 and politics to action, with the Vatican, with this Department of Homeland Security, an asteroid, and then into the sci-fi end when we find two time travelers that have been here in a pod, and they tell us the truth. And I'm not going to tell you what they say. You have to read the book. But, that's the storyline on that. But it tells the people everything they really need to know about the UFO genre.
So you've taken some actual documentation and woven that into the book.
Absolutely. Yeah, everything that we've just talked about is in this storyline.
All right. Now, let me... We have touched on just briefly the notion of, you talked about the Brookings report, and we've touched on this idea of, can we handle it? And I have to tell you that the majority of my audience says, yes, we can. I think before, and I think in the United States, Canada, Great Britain, Germany, France, Italy, Australia, some of the Asian countries, I think the answer is yes, we can handle it. Russia, the Balkans area, I think the answer is yes. But we have to define what we mean when we say, this sounds like Bill Clinton, what's the definition of we? When we say, yes, we can handle it, who are we talking about? If we're talking about the entire planet, the answer is no. No, the entire planet cannot handle it. When there are riots because of cartoons, then and when death sentences are issued by religious leaders over those cartoons, then the answer is no. We're still, as a race, if you look at us planet-wide, knuckle-draggers. We are.
Yeah, I agree. There's going to be pockets, particularly in the Muslim society, that probably can't handle it. But you know that the Vatican came out with a statement, Father Balducci has talked about this for years, that the Vatican statement on this is that there are that UFOs are real, aliens are real, that just think about, would God only create life on this little planet out of trillions? And this stance of the Vatican is that there is life out there, and they're all God's children, and they all have souls. And I think that's a way of quelling the people to say that, all right, they're not they don't look like us, but, you know, they're God's children, just like us.
If they don't look like me, they are lucky. Now, having said what I just said, there are people that jump to the conclusion that I am saying that there should be no disclosure. And that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is we have to understand that our political leaders do have to grapple with the consequences that could happen once disclosure takes place. They have to grapple with that ahead of time. They have to try and figure what to do if all hell breaks loose as a result of them going on TV and making statements about this. We have to take a break. We'll be back right after this break. We'll take your calls. Maybe you totally disagree with what I just said. Well, don't be a chicken. Call and tell me what you think. 1-800-289-1092. Toll free throughout North America. We'll take your calls on the other side of this break.
Es mejor no llorar y callar mi dolor. He cerrado mi corazón en un grito ilógico de profundos sentimientos que se enredan en tu piel. Me convertí en roca. No hay brillo en mi sueño. Sentir, me convertí en roca, me brillo en mis sueños. Es mejor no mirar, es mejor ignorar, es mejor no vivir que seguir sin final. Me he negado a sentir la ternura del amor, a las noches estrelladas que me daban tu calor. Me convertí en roca, me brillo en mis sueños. No quiero llorar, ni quiero sufrir, no quiero amar, tengo miedo a sentir, me convertí en roca.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
Welcome back. We are talking with John Ventry. John is the author of a book called 12-21-2012, A Prophecy. He is also the state director for MUFON in Pennsylvania and West Virginia, two states. And we're talking with him about his book and about how his work with MUFON, how his position with MUFON plays into that book. If you have a question or a comment, the telephone number, toll-free throughout all of North America, is 1-800-289-1092.
All right, John, let's go straight to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Larry from California.
Hi, Larry.
John.
Hi.
Just kind of a quick question. Back in the 60s when they, I guess, came up with the decision that we couldn't handle it, you know, if they told us that UFOs were real, did they actually base that on the radio broadcast by Orson Welles?
I think that that was the majority of what proof they had that we couldn't handle it, the way we reacted to that Orson Welles radio broadcast, and obviously however else they examined it and looked at the psychological factor. But that Orson Welles broadcast definitely was a major factor in the decision that people couldn't handle that type of truth.
Well, you know, it seems like they could have done it differently rather than base it on the fact that we're being invaded and being taken over by Martians rather than them coming here on a peaceful mission. You know, it's kind of like one-sided, it seems like.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the issue is not really over the psychology of it. I think the issue is over the technology and the power base and what happens to oil companies and the people that are in charge right now. And let me just read a line to you. It's the final quote in my book, and it's from President Woodrow Wilson from 100 years ago. And this is the president, and I believe it was 1907. He says, "Some of the most important men in the U.S. are afraid of something. They know that there is a power somewhere so organized, so subtle, so pervasive, so watchful, and so complete that they better not speak above their breath when they speak in condemnation of it." This is the president of the United States 100 years ago. So there's more to the story than we know, and maybe the Brookings Institute knows more than we do.
All right. Well, thank you, gentlemen. Have a good evening.
All right. Thank you for the call, Larry. I saw that on your website, and that quote. That's pretty amazing when you consider when the statement was made and by whom the statement was made. Now, you know, the interesting thing about that is that Woodrow Wilson is thought of by many, many people to have been very much firmly ensconced in the Illuminati. He's, you know, the father of the one world government movement that is still with us today, with his League of Nations, and then it later that failed, and the next version of it was the United Nations, and who knows what the next version will be. But
you know what's interesting? In my storyline, we closed the United Nations based on their past record and actually turned it into low-rent housing in Manhattan, and we go more to the G7, where each continent each continent is represented by one, you know, one person represents each continent, and you have to get your affairs in order by continent. Like the EU, there'll be a North American Union. That's in my storyline, too. But we scrap the UN, and we go to a G7.
All right, let's go to the telephone and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, this is Trey in Atlanta.
Hello, Trey.
Hey, look, I want to say about disclosure, I don't think it'd be as big a deal now as it was. One thing I wanted to ask your guest, just because of the name of his book, there's a band, a rock band from Canada, from, I guess, I think they started in the late 60s, early 70s, and called Rush. And they've got an album, and the name of the album is 2112. And
is it 2112 or 2012?
No, the name of the album is 2112.
All right.
And this is about 100 years after 2012. And it goes on, and things are run by what this, these people call themselves the priest. And the priest, and they basically said, we've given you equality, that they run things, everybody's equal, and we're basically a worker race. And then it goes on to talk about the elder race coming back to take back the planet in 2112. And let's see here, how strange. I was wondering if your guest had ever heard this song, and while I find the correct lyrics, it's a kind of along this entire album side, and the stuff that it describes is here. Okay, here it describes that they left our planets long ago. The elder race still learn and grow. Their power grows with purpose strong to claim the home where they belong. Home to tear the temples down, home to change. And the temples were run by the priest. And they were the priest of the temples of Syrinx. And it says, and on the album cover, it's got a red star and a circle. And in one of the parts of the song, it says, it tells us to hold the red star proudly high in hand. And I was wondering, and it turns out that this rock group was actually asked down to watch a space shuttle launch in the 80s by NASA, and to write a song about it. And they put a song about it. It was on an album from the 80s called Signals, and it was called Countdown. And it had a lot of the footage, and they were just singing a song basically describing watching the launching pad from Florida.
Okay, Trey, do you have a question for the guest?
Yes, I was going to ask him, has he ever heard of this group, because this group or this album or this story or anything about what I just described? And I would suggest you might want to look into this. And Kevin, this might be a good guest for you to have on to interview.
I like rock groups anyway, so I'll check it out.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't say I've ever heard of Rush in the song of 2112, but you know what comes to mind when you talk about this is, I mean, you can go to the Bible that talks about the sons of God that would mate with human women, and it's almost along the same lines that there was something here more superior to us. And you can go back to even the Roman and Greek mythology with Zeus, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, that's all there. There somewhere in our history, and even a lot of societies have folklore about giant people that stood 9 feet tall. They were pushed, the Israelites pushed them out of Canaan, and there's Mexican mythology about that too. So
well, that's even in the Bible. Mention of a king whose bed was like 15 feet long, and he was like 13 feet tall.
You see, there seems to be a history to our past, and I relate it to almost like the movie Planet of the Apes, where we're suppressing some truth, because there's a lot that doesn't add up. Evolution doesn't quite add up. We find things out of place in our archaeology, these myths, giant people, et cetera. And I think there's a lot more to our history than we've been told, and it's really to keep everybody, in line, almost like that Brookings report, because we can't handle the truth. And I believe we can, though.
I think that probably the majority of the world can. I think there, as I described earlier, are places where, actually, my opinion is some of these places can't handle much of anything. I mean, if you introduce a new brand of potato chips, you can cause a riot. And, they're just, I don't know why. There are places on this planet where people have this nut button. You don't know really where it is, but if you ever accidentally push it, they just go nuts.
Yep.
And, I've lived in some of these places, and I have I've had my back against a wall with me and two, three other police officers, with our backs against the wall of a chief's hut with spears aimed at our chest. I've had that happen, all right, over a water buffalo. You never really quite know what sets people off. So can we handle it? Yeah, I think we, most of us probably can. Here's the deal, and this is really where I was headed in talking about disclosure. It's really not a question of can we. It's going to happen. And what has to happen is for all the political leaders that have been elected or by whatever means became the political leaders in their countries, they really have to try and anticipate what could happen. Because, you know, look, things can cascade. Look what happened on the stock market, and look what happened with our economy over one issue, subprime loans. Now add to that the collapse of one, just one major oil company. Add that into the mix. And let's say that it's because of disclosure and technology gets out there. And there's an oil company that just didn't sort of plan for what to do. And it collapses. One major oil company. Do you think the United States economy could take that double hit like that?
Well, that's why I say I think it's more about the money and the economics and who's going to be in charge, and you can't allow, you know, the economy to collapse over a situation like this.
You're right. All right, we have to take a break. It's our final break of this show. We'll be on Final Approach, but we will take your telephone calls on the other side when we come back.
So
You know, there's never been a better time for you to start your own broadcast. I know there are a lot of paranormal investigators. I know there are a lot of people who are paranormal experiencers who want to have their own broadcast. Well, now you can, right here at Steel Eye Media Network. It is within your grasp. You can do it, and we're waiting to hear from you. Give us a call today at 1-800-318-1008.
Call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
Don't forget, folks, if you haven't subscribed yet to the K-Files e-zine, be sure you do that. It is free. No strings attached. It's our free weekly e-zine. Comes out each weekend and comes straight to your email, all right? Some of you send me emails saying, where's my K-Files e-zine? I subscribed and I haven't gotten it. And then we check our database and find out you didn't click the confirmation link we sent you. Got to do that. We got to make sure you really intended to subscribe because we do not spam anybody, all right? John,
would you say, as you watch these, with your knowledge of the things that the government has documented, would you say, as you watch movies, sci-fi movies, that a lot of that is getting woven into them?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's part of, you know, you change the way people think, and you do it slowly. You don't make a broad announcement that, okay, starting today, there are aliens. What you do is you do it slowly, and it's almost covertly that you start to weave this into movies and into shows, and then you start thinking a certain way. And I think that's what's happening. Now, with the questions on disclosure, I would hope that they would come to us and to you who are experts in this field, but my guess is that when disclosure happens, those same people that were debunking it and giggling about it will just put their other hat on because it's the familiar face you see on television, and they will now be the experts in it. And I think that's probably the way it'll go.
Oh, I think so. You know, I think an anchor will continue to be an anchor, which, of course, is a heavy weight that drags down the forward progress of a ship.
Yep.
Yeah, I think they will. One of the questions that I've been asked, I wouldn't say a whole lot of email, but I've gotten this fairly frequently over the past year. If disclosure takes place and they come out and say, yep, it's all real, what's going to happen to your show? Well, nothing. I've been telling you it's real all along. And I've also been saying, and I want to get your opinion on this before we run out of time, John, I've been saying, I don't need the government to pat me on the head and say, yep, doorknobs are real.
I agree with you. All you got, and you know, when I became in charge of MUFON for the state, two states, like I said, I wasn't that well versed in it. And as I start to look, there is so much out there to convince you. What presidents said, these legal documents, it's all there. You just got to go look for it. And if you're going to be, you know, a debunker or somebody who doesn't believe, well, don't be uninformed. You know, just look, and once you see the facts, it's almost like an atheist looking at religion and becoming religious. When you look at this, you're going to believe that it's there. And I don't need somebody to tell me. I'm convinced to this point that this is real.
You know, we use the word believe because I guess we really don't have a better word. But in actual fact, you know, UFOs don't demand that we believe. Either they exist or they don't. It's just like Volkswagens. I don't believe in Volkswagens. I know they exist.
Right, and we wouldn't have laws against having contact with them, you know, if it's just a weather balloon. You're not going to be imprisoned and fined for a weather balloon or something that doesn't exist. And there's been so many congressional hearings and presidents that it's beyond the fact of whether it's real. It's really the next step as to how do we handle this and how do we get it into the society and do it calmly. And it may be like you're saying, just slowly get it into movies, into the media, and then you change the way people think slowly.
When are we going to see your book as a movie?
Well, I'd love to. I hope somebody's out there listening, because this book, it has four different storylines, and you could almost take any one of those and make a movie or sequels. And like I was talking to you earlier today, I've got other ideas that would be just great shows, but you got to get that contact. So if there's an agent or a producer out there, contact you, and you can contact me.
Well, I can tell you this. We have agents, producers, and directors and actors that not only have been on the show but listen to the show, so it's possible maybe something will happen with it. How can people get your book?
Well, there's a couple of ways. You can just go on to Amazon.com, and if you just hit 2012 books, there's probably... The funny thing was, when I wrote this, there was four books out there. Now there's about 20, and you'll see it as one of them there, or you put the title in. But what I'd really like you to do is, my son made up a web page, and it is great. It's like the trailer of a movie. And if you go in and type in www.12-21-2012-a-prophecy.com/, you'll get his opening scene to this book, which is great. And I'd really like you to see that, because he did a good job in making the website.
We'll get that link up on my page right next to your picture. We normally do that. We've had such difficulty in the past couple of days uploading anything because of changes down at the hosting company. I overlooked it, but we'll get that link up, and we'll get it up there tonight. Okay. So people will be able to just click right beside your picture, and it'll take them right to your website.
Okay, I'll email it to you in a minute.
Okay. Now, what comes next?
Well, next would be, my desire would be, obviously, to get this more mainstream and into a movie, because there's two movies coming out on 2012. One, Michael Bay's directing a Whitley Strieber book, and there's another one, Tom Day's directing a Disney-type movie on 2012. I'd love to see this go into a movie, and that would be great. And if that doesn't happen, then I'll just wait for Disclosure, because I'm in the right position, obviously, with MUFON to educate people, and I'm very... Like you had said, a lot of us are very even keel, and you know, if there's people who don't understand, we can explain it, and it's not scary.
I think that's important, because there's so many really scary things out there that are being said about 2012. And you know, one of the things that I say is on, and people really disagree with this, but that's okay. Yeah, they still, the ones that like me still like me. I'll tell you my plans for December 21st, 2012. I'm going Christmas shopping. I really don't think there's going to be much happening. I think it will be sort of a Y2K thing. But if I'm wrong, we will all know it at the same time.
That's right. I'll be watching the sky.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is, I just have this thing. I don't worry about things that I can't affect. If it happens, it happens, and we'll ride the wave together. And, you know, if it's, there are people that say, yeah, but, you know, if you plan for it, you know, you might survive. You can't plan for something that you don't know for sure is going to happen that way. So once we start knowing for sure about some things, I might start doing some planning. Right now, the plans are Christmas shopping. John, I have enjoyed this conversation, and I thank you for being with us tonight, and I hope sincerely that you'll come back and talk with us again.
Absolutely. I'd love to be a guest again.
If you will, just hang on the line for a moment, because okay. I want to talk with you a moment after the show. Folks, I recommend that you get this book and take a look at it. I think it's exciting. I think it's a great storyline, and...
I think it'd make a great movie. So some of you producers, some of you folks that make films that are listening to the show, get in touch with this guy and take a look at this book. This would make a great movie. Tomorrow night will be open line night. We try to do that once each week. Sometimes we don't get around to it, but we try. Tomorrow night will be open line, and we'll talk about anything and everything that you want to talk about, so long as it is not politics. All right? We here on this show, we try to stick with the more important things. All right. We also need to do something, need to tell you something, and that is that on Thursday night, Dr. Michio Kaku will be with us, and then on Friday night, Michael Sala. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want to call me, just keep coming back, all right? I'll be back tomorrow, you'll be here too. Until then, so long, everybody.